Salvate discipuli and salvate omnes. Welcome again to another episode of Latin in Layman's. I'm going to be doing another myth, and then I'm going to take a little bit of a break from myths, go back to some etymology, probably some Latin grammar. I want to get back into some Latin grammar and stuff like that because, you know, when I'm filling my free time right now, I'm either trying to tutor, filling my idle time with volunteering. I've been going down to a couple churches down the road from me and or the animal shelter. Your boy is really, really feeling like he wants to get a puppet. They're so cute. I love dogs so much. I do love cats, but you give me around a couple little puppies and I just start melting. I just become the... Anyways, I don't know why I went on that tangent. Oh, yeah, it's because in my idle time when I'm not doing those things, I've been working more on my Latin and layman's textbook that, you know, has been something that I've been working on for a while. And I always stop and I'm like, well, do you think anybody would really actually purchase a book like this? It's supposed to really kind of go in tandem with Wheelock's Latin. So I've been doing that. And then I've also, a lot of the grammar episodes are basically just a recitation of the material that I've already written for that particular chapter, because each lesson is correlative to Wheelock chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. So, because we know that Wheelock is great, but it also moves kind of slowly. So, let me hear your thoughts. I haven't been hearing and or getting a lot of engagement on my the response, but you can always leave me something about, like, I think it's like right after you scroll down when you click on the Spotify episode. You can scroll down in the show notes and see, or it'll show like a little bubble where it's like, oh yeah, what did you think of this episode? So let me know what you think. Let me know what you want. And then if I do what you may very well ask, maybe you can go ahead and consider tipping me. You can leave me a little tip on Ko-Fi. You can go over. I changed it so it just doesn't say Liam64728, but you can follow the link in the show notes to Gut Guardian, which will in turn, I believe when you click that link, it already applies to $10 off when you check out. It may not. So again, remember, it's Liam64728 that I also supply in the show notes. But you can also support me there because I get a little teeny tiny commission when you buy something from them. So consider that. If you are on TikTok, you also follow me on TikTok, and any of those things on my showcase are of intrigue to you, that those I get a little teeny tiny commission from as well. Not a lot by any means, but it's a means of supporting me and helping me out. And I hope you'd want to help me out. With that being said, I'm not going to belabor it. We're going to get into it. You ready? Go ahead and just kind of relax now. Story time. Who doesn't love a good story time? Have I told you what the myth is yet? I haven't. Do you want to know what the myth is? It's the myth of Apollo and Cassandra. And that's all I'll say. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, way off in a far, far away land, in the shadow of Mount Ida, nestled within the Trojan walls, lived Cassandra, daughter of King Priam. Her beauty rivaled the roses that climbed the palace walls, and her intelligence was as sharp as the spear her brother Hector wielded. Yet, as an invisible weight burdened her spirit, a secret yearning for a life untouched by the whispers of fate. One twilight, as Cassandra wandered through the temple gardens, a figure bathed in the golden light materialized before her. It was Apollo, the sun god, his form radiating an otherworldly brilliance. He was captivated by Cassandra, not just for her beauty, but for the spark of prophecy he sensed within her. He offered her a gift, the ability to see the future, to pierce the veil of time. Cassandra, enthralled by the prospect, readily agreed. Apollo leaned closer, his touch sending a shiver down her spine. But as he leaned in for a kiss, a flicker of doubt ignited within her. The weight of the god's desire felt stifling, a demand veiled as a gift. In a moment of defiance, she recoiled. Apollo's face contorted in rage. He could not take back the gift, for divine pronouncements were irrevocable. But in a cruel twist, he cursed her pronouncements. "You shall see the future," he thundered. "But your words will be met with nothing but scorn. The truth will forever dance on your tongue, a melody unheard." Grief washed over Cassandra. The gift she craved became a bitter burden. Visions flooded her mind. The fall of Troy, the death of her loved ones, the flames consuming her city. Hector. Yet when she tried to warn her father, her brother Hector, her pleas, they were all dismissed as the ravings of a mad woman. No one believed the Trojan princess, cursed to see a future no one wanted to hear. As the years flowed and ebbed by, Cassandra's pronouncements gained an unsettling accuracy. She warned against Paris' abduction of Helen, the catalyst of the Trojan War, but pleaded with Hector not to face Achilles for seeing his demise. But her words were met with mockery and dismal. The Greeks besieged Troy, their relentless waves crashing against the city walls. Inside, despair festered inside the walls. One night, the Greeks presented the Trojans with a seemingly innocuous gift, a giant wooden horse. Innocuous, if, yeah, definitely not. What's his name? I'm trying to remember the name of the Laocoon. They should have listened to Laocoon. Elation swept through Troy, blinding them to the truth. Cassandra desperately screamed. The horse was a trap. Yet a trap. A belly full of Greek soldiers waiting to unleash their fury under the cloak of night. Her pleas fell on deaf ears. Deiphobus, Cassandra's promised husband, silenced her with a cruel hand, further solidifying her image as a mad prophetess. As the Trojans celebrated their perceived victory, Cassandra watched in horror, a lone sentinel of impending doom. The night fell, pregnant with treachery. The Greeks emerged from the horse, unleashing fire and fury upon the unsuspecting Trojans. The screams of the dying echoed through the night, a symphony of Cassandra's unheeding warnings. Unheeded warnings. In the chaos, Ajax the Lesser, a Greek warrior, dragged Cassandra from the sanctuary of Athena's temple, violating her in a final act of barbarity. Side note, Greek heroes. Are they Greek heroes? No. I hate Ajax the Lesser. I hate Agamemnon. Who do I not hate that's a Greek hero? Who's the lesser of all the evils? You guys should comment and provide in the show notes or whatever. Sorry for the little intermission here. Inter meaning between, mission meaning or coming from the past participial form, mito materi, which means to send. So to send in between is my little thoughts on the Greek heroes right now. So just bear with me. Who do you think is the lesser of all the evils in terms of Greek heroes? Maybe Odysseus, but Odysseus was the guy that, you know, concocted this whole Trojan horse plan, and then they just murked on all of the Trojans. within those walls. It is a brutal scene. I am not getting into it in its entirety, but we can assume that Ajax the Lesser violating her in a final act of barbarity is pretty disgusting. And it makes me want to punch Ajax and the Lesser in the face even more than I already do now. Let's continue. In the aftermath of Troy's destruction, Agamemnon, another poopy butthole, the Greek leader, even though he's a poopy butthole, ignored Cassandra's warnings of his wife Clytemnestra's treachery. Clytemnestra didn't really have treachery, though. Let me go ahead and say that. She was upset that Agamemnon sacrificed their daughter Iphigenia in order to quell the winds so that they can sail from the shores of Greece to actually docking on Troy. Agamemnon sacrificed his daughter in order to take part in a war for his little ego-hurt brother, Menelaus. Because Menelaus couldn't help but not want a war simply because Paris took his girl away. We'll get into that myth at another time. But talking about Clytemnestra's treachery, upon his return, he was murdered by his wife and her lover, fulfilling another of Cassandra's prophecies. And that is fulfilled in the plays that follow the Trojan War. There are plays and myths and stories written about all the Greek heroes making their way back after the sack of Troy, trying to get back home. That's what the Odyssey is. The Odyssey is Odysseus from Troy trying to get back home. That's what the whole book is about. Agamemnon, a series of three plays, talks about first Agamemnon coming back, Clytemnestra really ticked off. She kills him because, well, hey, you know what? Clytemnestra's daughter was sacrificed by her husband for the sake of waging a war. I'd be ticked if I was Clytemnestra too. Also, Clytemnestra is a really cool name. It's a mouthful. So I don't know if I would name, if I had a daughter, I wouldn't name my daughter Clytemnestra, but it's a cool name. I like the name Cleo for a girl. Sloane as well. I think Sloane is a cool name for a girl. I also think Scat is a really cute and adorable name. But you don't care about that. We want to talk a little bit more about why this myth may resonate over, you know, and or across times and for the multitude of reasons that I am going to garner from my head right now. Because on the surface, it serves as this ideological myth explaining the distress placed upon prophets and seers, essentially. But Cassandra's story warns us of the dangers of ignoring those who see beyond the veil of the present. I think that Cassandra was always this unsung hero, and everybody just equated her as this crazy chick that could see into the future, but really, you know, nobody listened to her still, even though things were coming to fruition. Everybody just wanted to turn a blind eye, I guess. On the surface, it serves just like that. And also a cautionary tale for societies that prioritize immediate gratification over long-term consequences. But the myth also delves deeper, and it explores the complex relationship between power, desire, and truth, because we have Apollo's actions, which highlight the manipulative nature of power and what he was trying to do. But then, you know what? He didn't get a little, as they say in Latin, a bacia, or in Spanish, beso, a little kiss. Cassandra's like, no, dude, get off of me, you old creepy man in the lounge in my workplace. Stop being all old man creep vibe, dude. Anyways, he tried to manipulate his power, particularly when wielded with that gift that he gave her. And then, because he got his little ego, you know, he was a little poopy hearted, his curse on Cassandra exposes the vulnerability of truth when it conflicts with the established power that are already set in structure. So Cassandra kind of becomes a symbol of this marginalized voice. The one who speaks truth to power, but is ostracized and silenced for doing so, because it just is what it is. Her story also kind of speaks to the human condition, our inherent resistance to accept unpleasant truths, right? Nobody really wanted to accept all the things that Cassandra was very much laying out straight for everybody. Yo, this gonna happen. I would be a little wary. No. So it kind of, you know, Cassandra, she kind of like encapsulates the burden of foresight and intuition and the curse of knowing a future we can't change. Yikes. It compels us, or at least me, to confront the limitations of knowledge and the powerlessness we sometimes feel in the face of fate. And then this myth kind of remains relevant to today. We don't really talk about it as much, but Cassandra is a very, 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 very important figure in Greek mythology. In a world saturated with information and competing narratives, it reminds us to be critical thinkers, to question what we hear and seek out diverse perspectives. It also kind of highlights the dangers of ignoring inconvenient truths, right? Ignoring things that we may not want to hear, but we probably should be listening to, whether it's in politics, the environment, our personal lives. Sometimes the things that make us want to protect our ego are probably the things that we need to be listening to more. You know, when you have a moment where you feel immediately the need, or the immediate need to protect your view or your belief or your ideology or whatever, and it's a very stark thing, like sometimes, like maybe you're in an argument or something like that, and you get this visceral response where you just want to go on the attack, that is a moment that I'm really trying to work hard on. I'm really good with other people. The people that I love and am closest to in my life, I find it harder for me to check myself with. But when that occurs, I try to take a step back. I try to take this third perspective in my life and see that it's all coming from my ego. I'm being reactive, like my prior school, because they tend to just kind of react and fire people without being proactive and thinking about how it could, affect the environment of the school, adversely or otherwise. I'm not gonna lie. Firing people, whether it be a principal and or the only Latin teacher at the school with 2 months left of school, is not really a proactive decision, in my opinion, especially with how it all transpired. That's just me. But think about that. Think about when you feel like you need to protect your ego. That is a time when maybe you should listen to that inconvenient truth. Because ultimately, the story of Cassandra is a reminder that truth, even when unwelcome, it has value. It may not always be pleasant. It may not always be what you want to hear. But by acknowledging and engaging with it and sitting with it and thinking about it and being more understanding to any and all perspectives, we can navigate an uncertain future with greater clarity. I want to be clear. I want to be understanding. I want to see perspectives. I want to communicate. I want to converse. And I want to hear those inconvenient truths that urge me to take a step back and say, like, you know what? Is what I've been believing true? Or maybe I got to change it a little bit. I have changed my opinion on things so often in my life, you guys. That's why I am so humbled by life. I just did a podcast or a little TikTok dealio on scio. Scio sciere in Latin, which means to know. It's where you get science. Science is the discipline of knowing. But in terms of knowing, in order to know, we have to understand what is not known. And that's what the scientific process is. we place hypotheses at first, and then we test and test and retest. Hypo is below. Thesis means placement or a pudding. It is a below, an underplacement, essentially. It's kind of like that first step. It's like, all right, I got an idea. I'm going to set it in place. We're going to test, test, and retest until we get to the point where it holds true and those tests are viable. And then that whole scientific process moves to a step of theory. And then if that theory can prove itself through time and more testing and testing, then it becomes law. I feel like I skipped some steps there, but that's typically the scientific process. The testing of itself and of the hypotheses in our lives is a humble endeavor. It seeks to prove itself wrong. Seek to prove yourself wrong in order to know more, because once you figure out what's wrong, then you look at what's right and you move forward. It's not that big of a deal. I lost a TikTok follower because I was doing an eclipse episode, and one of the comments, and even if, like, I went to her profile and her, like, tag named, she spells upon, APON. So that's just the level of knowledge that this person is willing to, I guess, put in their heads, because they said a nice compliment. They said, you're fine. But what they did say, the way they spelt it is Y-O-U-R. You're fine is an incomplete statement, if anything. If you were saying you're fine, you're saying that you're fine. Your is possessive. Fine would be an adjective describing whatever you are possessing. See how that is an incomplete thought. What is you're fine? You're fine China, for instance. That would make more sense. But if she's trying to say you're fine to me, which, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I wish, you know what? Would that person have said that to me in person? Probably not. That's what I hate about social media, is because it creates this space where people feel emboldened to say things. Guys, you have no idea what I have had to deal with when people slide in my DMs. It is very, very disgusting to know that people feel like they can just say whatever they want just because it's guised through text and through their TikTok handles and their anonymity, and it's all cowardice. And then I went into I went into a TikTok episode explaining how we could better understand that. I hope that that person didn't take it personally. If they did take it personally, I would recommend the four agreements, because one of the four agreements is to not take things personally. So definitely consider that, but whatever, it's okay. You know what? If you want to unfollow me because I just wanted to give you a teaching lesson and kind of make it a little funny thing, little meme, that's on you. That's your deal. I'm trying to grow. I'm trying to level up. And if I get things wrong, all I got to do is look at what's wrong, make it right. I always like doing that with my students. I always like saying, like, hey, you know what? I don't know something. Let's go ahead and ask Almighty Google. I am not the end all be all. I know a lot of things. I have a lot of things in my head, but I always want to know more. I can know more. I don't want to be a dummy dumb in this world, because looks fade, dumb is forever. So regardless, if I'm fine, I won't be fine forever. I'm going to be wrinkly. I'm going to be old. I'm going to have blemishes. I'm going to have weathered spots. I'm going to move well still, though. I'm going to move well. I'm going to make sure that I am going to be autonomous. I am going to be an 80-year-old that is going to be able to put my luggage in the overhead bins in the airplane. That's what I'm going to be able to do, because so often do I have to do that for other old people. And I'm not going to be that old person, even though I am so willing to do that for other people. I am a hyper-independent person. I rely on myself, and I know that I can do it. Anyways, if you get things wrong, it's okay. Quite a bit of a ramble-bamble here. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to leave it there. Leave some room to be kind to yourself. Okay? I'm proud of you. Be proud of yourself. I know that's easier said than done, because it's hard for me to be proud of myself sometimes, and or a lot of the time. But with that being said, Temple says to Skittery.